Hi, this is ETF.com's Exchange Traded Fridays podcast, a weekly podcast covering developments in the ETF industry. My name is Sumeet Roy, and I'm senior ETF analyst for ETF.com. This week, I'm talking with Christy Akulian, senior iShares investment strategist at BlackRock. Christy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Christy, I want to talk about a report you put out not too long ago, your iShares mid-year 2023 outlook. It's been a few weeks, but a lot of what you talk about in that report is still very much relevant. But before we get into that, do you have any thoughts about this week's Fed rate decision? The market kind of saw it as a yawner, but what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, we sort of jokingly internally referred to it as FOMZs. It was a little bit of a sleeper, kind of agree with the market in that one. I think that Chair Powell did a really good job of staying on message. So definitely gets high marks in that if he was, even if he was a little bit repetitive, I think, in answering some of the questions. I think that his goal yesterday was sort of a, you know, to keep the September meeting live and retain as much optionality as possible. And I think that he did that. You know, we've obviously seen 525 basis points of hikes. And yet, you know, on the good side, the good news, I think, is the Fed has also kind of removed their forecast for a recession. So I think there's some acknowledgement that inflation is coming down on its own. And we're probably, you know, getting to, if not at, the terminal rate. So now I think the question is kind of how long we stay here.
FOMZs, I like that one. So Christy, you know, going back to your mid-year outlook, one interesting chart that you had in the report, it showed three paths for core inflation. So starting from close to 5% that we're at now, inflation could moderate at either a, you know, a fast pace or a slower pace. Could you get into that a little bit more?
Yeah, definitely. So I think you're referring to our fan chart. This is one that we've been updating for a couple, well, you know, a year and a half now, which is very interesting. But yeah, so what we're trying to do is just look at possible scenarios. And specifically, we're looking at month over month inflation. So we know that we can get some kind of wonky base effects if we look at year over year and certain things. So what we're doing is just looking at core CPI and then seeing how that could play out over the next several months. So the idea being that if it was running at about, you know, 0.3% month over month, then by the end of the year, we would still be, you know, close to 4% at core CPI, which is, you know, double the Fed's target. We would really need inflation to fall to something like 0.1%, which is lower than it has been for more than a year, for us to get closer to that 2% at the end of the year. So, you know, it's just sketching out sort of what some of the possible scenarios are. You know, that said, I do think that we have seen inflation come down pretty meaningfully in a lot of areas. Obviously, there's the difference between core and headline. I know Chair Powell likes to talk about core services ex shelter. You could call that kind of super core, if you will. But that's really the parts that are moving the fastest. And we've seen some gains there in terms of, you know, getting inflation tamped down and back under control. So importantly, I think inflation expectations haven't gotten higher either. So yeah, I think we're in a better place than we have been. But still, you know, the Fed, you know, very clear in their communications yesterday that one data print of falling inflation that actually came in under expectations is not going to be enough for them to start cutting interest rates, right? So I think we've still, you know, we've made progress, but we've still got a long way to go.
Definitely. Just one data point, but it is on the right track. Interestingly, today we got the first look at GDP growth for the second quarter, and it surprised to the upside, 2.4% growth. Powell and the Fed keep saying that we likely need to see some softness in the economy to bring inflation sustainably lower, but we haven't seen that yet. Do you think something's eventually going to give in the economy, Christy?
Oh gosh, this is at least the billion-dollar question, probably the trillion-dollar question, right? I think it's interesting that if you look at expert forecasts and economists and sort of Wall Street analysts, there's still such a wide range of expectations in terms of whether we're going to get this kind of almost mythical soft landing that hasn't really been able to pull off in the past. But if we do, that would be, you know, great news for the economy and for risk assets and stock market. And then there's a decent amount of expectation too from kind of the forecasters that maybe the recession has just been pushed back, right? So I think that, coming into this year, there was about a 60% consensus in terms of what forecasters were expecting, that we were going to get a recession in kind of the first half of the year, and the second half was going to be the one that was the recovery. And now, I don't know that we have completely ruled out the idea of a recession, but what most forecasters are looking for is for that to come in 2024, if it comes at all. So certainly the soft landing scenario and expectation has taken hold. I think we've seen risk assets and in particular equity markets really trade on those expectations. So yeah, I mean, I do think that the picture looks a lot better than we expected it to, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're out of the woods just yet. So I think one of the kind of themes that underlies the mid-year outlook that we just put out is just trying to take a gauge for what's already in the price. How much optimism is there already in the stock market, and where stocks are trading at this moment? And so we like to be just a little bit more defensive, again, because we don't necessarily think we're out of the woods just yet. It's really tough to raise interest rates this much and not kind of have that metaphorical something break. So we're definitely rooting for that, but not yet ready to kind of jump into the market without a little bit of probably warranted caution there.
Gotcha. So too early to say. And yeah, we will talk about the stock market a little bit more in a second. But before we do, Christy, in your report, you did mention that when it comes to fixed income, one thesis that you're kind of working with is this idea that rates are going to stay higher for longer. A lot of people, including the market, didn't really believe that. All year long, people were calling for rate cuts, but it seems like people are finally coming around to the idea that, yeah, interest rates are probably going to stay higher for longer. What does that mean, when it comes to fixed income? How should investors be positioning themselves?
Yeah, that is a great question, especially because we've seen, this real renaissance in fixed income and fixed income allocations. So the first half of the year was the largest on record for bond ETFs, in terms of flows, for example. So, I think that we have sort of changed our outlook on exactly where within fixed income is best set up for the path forward. So whereas the beginning of the year, we were really looking and focused at kind of the very front end of the curve, and just sort of the 1 to 2 year duration space. So keeping it up in quality, keeping it short in duration, and that's a trade that has worked really well, especially with the yield curve being as inverted as it is. That said, at this point, we really do see more opportunity in adding to duration here. So we like stepping out a little bit longer in terms of, kind of medium-term fixed income. So we think bonds, with maturities between kind of 3 and 7 years is kind of the sweet spot right now. A few things have changed, right? The yield curve is still inverted, and so the highest yields are still the kind of very front. But one thing that has changed really meaningfully from last year, and this is in particular kind of post-March and the regional banking crisis that we saw, is that correlations between stocks and bonds are negative again. And that is a really great thing for your portfolio. So that means that bonds can provide ballast against, whatever may be happening in the equity markets. So I think that is, it's a good thing overall for portfolios and for investors. And so again, we see opportunity in kind of stepping out a little bit. And if we look at the historical analogs here too, from 1990 all the way kind of through February of this year, we've seen that core bonds, so those bonds kind of between that 3 and 7 year maturity, have performed quite a bit better than cash when the Fed has either held or started dropping interest rates. So I think that now is the time to start to position for that, and really to kind of step out of cash, invest in bonds, and lock in some of those higher yields that we do think are, we do think the Fed is going to hold interest rates higher for longer, but it won't be forever. And so you want to position into that before rate cuts start happening.
I'm glad you brought that up because last year all the news stories were about how the 60-40 portfolio is dead and how bonds aren't giving you that protection anymore, but it sounds like, as they have historically done, bonds are going to be kind of that steadying force within your portfolio eventually once, the Fed stops hiking rates. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned the renaissance in fixed income. I think for the longest time, investors really looked at it as almost a necessary evil in their portfolio. It just wasn't that, fixed income was kind of lacking the income component, right? But with yields where they are right now, we see kind of generational opportunities to invest in fixed income, to lock in these higher yields, and to let, the bond part of the 60-40 portfolio do more of the heavy lifting. So we do really, see great opportunity there. We've just shifted from being very front end to adding a little bit of duration as is kind of what we think makes sense from here.
Makes a lot of sense. So, Christy, now I want to turn to the stock market. There's been this massive move up in the S&P 500 this year, 20% already year to date. Are you skeptical of this rally? And what are you advising investors to do?
Yeah, this is where we spend the most amount of time. Whenever we're speaking to investors and, we're working with our clients, I think that everybody kind of understands the opportunity in fixed income. And a lot of people have questions and are sort of head scratching around what's happening in the equity market right now. So a very wide dispersion in terms of how, people are looking at this current rally. So, I think you're exactly right to note the really strong performance that we've seen already. It has not been, it's no secret. It has been well covered, but I think there's a lot of chatter around kind of the very top, in terms of like the top seven performing stocks within the S&P 500 contributing about 70% of the gains year to date. So I think how concentrated the rally was did give us some pause. But that said, it's broadened out quite a bit since then. So it's not just the top seven, the other 493 stocks are up as well, or not all of them, but they are contributing positive returns for this year. So I think we do have a little bit more confidence in the rally considering that it's broadening out. But that said, I think our overarching tone at this point and at these levels of sort of the optimism that we see priced in, we prefer to be a little bit more defensive. So the way that we're thinking about allocating to the equity market now is really focusing on quality. So looking for companies that have been able to kind of maintain margin resilience over different economic cycles. We're looking for companies with strong balance sheets and with low leverage. So the types of companies that can kind of weather whatever may be coming. So I think we're leaning into quality here still. It's also a little bit of a growth play as well, which we like. We kind of like growth at a reasonable price. And, I think that message and that tone of stay invested, but pick the companies that have kind of the highest quality metrics around them to be able to capture some of this upside, but maybe be a little bit protected if we do see a correction coming.
Gotcha. That's great. So, Christy, no discussion about the markets today would be complete without at least one reference to AI. This is a theme.
I'm surprised we went this long.
I know.
This is probably
right?
The longest conversation anybody's had about investing for at least the last 3 months before we touched on AI.
Yeah, absolutely. But we have to do it because this is a theme that's really captured investors' imaginations this year. But is it all hype or is there really a long-term investment opportunity here?
Yeah, I definitely, we think and we see that there is long-term opportunity here. So, there is for sure hype, but there is a reality that underpins it, where we see opportunity for this to expand out from, kind of the current beneficiaries are sort of the technology stocks and companies who have been directly involved with, building some of the large language models or, have exposure to some of this generative AI that has really captured not only investors, but everybody's imagination. I think that over time, what we're going to see is that AI as a theme will add to productivity in other sectors as well. So we don't think of this as just a technology play. This is going to expand out to other sectors and to the real economy as well. So definitely not hype. I think the big question now is just again, kind of what is in the price, since we have seen some of these companies, with such strong performance already year to date. And so what we again kind of want to see is looking at how to invest in this that maybe expands beyond just sort of the clear and obvious winners and broadens out into some other beneficiaries as well, but definitely not just hype.
So, Christy, we hit on a lot of the key points that you made in your mid-year outlook. Great report. I encourage everyone to read it. But is there anything else you want to add before we close out this podcast?
I think that I would say, a lot of this year so far have caught investors off guards and sometimes off sides. And I think it's just a really good reminder about the importance of being able to stay invested, and really just being able to do so in ways that make the most sense for the economy. So again, our preferences here are probably a little bit more defensive than the broad market, but at no point, have we suggested that that means you step out of it. I think one of the things that we like to talk about quite a bit is, the difficulty, but still the kind of obsession with trying to time the market. And one of the things we like to say is that it's really about time in the market and not timing the market. So I think just kind of a reminder to everybody that stocks and the economy don't always play out exactly as expected. And that's why it's kind of good to have those core exposures in your portfolio. And
Yeah.
ETFs can be a great low-cost way to do that.
Absolutely. Very wise words. But we're going to have to leave it there, Christy. Thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your insights with us. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can find this and all other Exchange Traded Fridays episodes on ETF.com or on any major podcast platform. See you next week.